I'm Ian Barrett.
And I'm Erin Hayes.
Welcome to Business Beat. And today we're going to talk about bicycles, specifically high-tech bicycles.
And social justice.
With Brandale Randolph, a really wonderful inventor, entrepreneur, who's got a really interesting story to tell about bicycles. Welcome back to Business Beat. We have a really cool show here today. We're going to talk about transportation, but we're going to talk about two-wheel transportation. And we've got Brandale Randolph with you. This is somebody, normally Dave introduces it, David introduces the guest, but this is somebody we've had a relationship with a long time, and we're really, really excited. And it has a Worcester connection.
It does.
Which we are going to share with you very shortly. Brandale, could you let the audience know what it is 1854 Tech is all about?
1854, we are basically a bicycle company, but before that, we are actually not just a bicycle company. We are a tech company, and our mission is to create jobs for the formerly incarcerated. We were started in 2016 to create jobs for formerly incarcerated women, particularly in Framingham.
Yeah.
And we've grown from there, from making simple bikes to making now these high-tech communication systems on two wheels.
Right. We're going to backpedal.
Oh,
man.
Boy, that was good.
All right. When we first met Brandale, he was basically bringing bikes to market. And we have a production company in Framingham, and that's where he was based too. And we had done some marketing stuff, done some video, taken some stills, put together his website stuff. What I think is really interesting as far as Business Beat goes is how he was able to transform his company into what it is now. And I think, you know, if you could share with us this journey that you've been on, because it's actually, it's unbelievable. I mean, it has gone from, you know, a good idea to something that's basically captured the minds and finances of some pretty big people.
Yes, it's been an amazing journey. So when we first started, we were a simple bicycle company that wanted to create jobs for formerly incarcerated women in particular. The first idea, the iteration, was to take broken bikes and have them learn to repair those broken bikes. And then that grew from that, because we were taking margin away from the local bike shops, to having our own single speed brand. These are some of the ones you saw before. And that branding sort of needed a lot of tweaking. That's why I'm glad we met Ian and Erin, because it helped us tweak it to where we were able to keep our narrative in line with what we were trying to do, the past to the present, the historical to the future, that kind of narrative. We grew from there to electric bikes, because we thought there was a margin there in electric bikes that can sustain the jobs for the formerly incarcerated people we were trying to hire. However, in 2017, we started to get hit with tariffs.
Yeah.
Because what most people don't understand is that even if you're not importing stuff from China, other people are. Your parts suppliers are. They're supplying either raw materials or raw goods from China to sell to you as a markup. And because of the way products work, either you're going to sell an extremely low cost, and then you're competing with the Walmarts, the Targets, and everything else that you can do, or you stream at a very high-end level. But in bicycles, the very high-end levels are reserved for people who wear the spandex.
Right. Yeah.
So there's no real room there for us. So we tried to grow in that upper-end level, but we couldn't find the traction.
Well, I mean, let me stop you there, right there for a second. You actually had a business model that was ready to go out the door, and then the tariffs hit, and it just blew that apart.
Yes. We've had three or four different business models in between. My wife, who's a professor at Babson, helped develop these business models. And as we launch, it will be great. But then the unit cost would just explode, because next thing you know, a set of wheels that cost you $20 or $30 to import is now $60.
Wow. Right.
You know, and those kind of issues. We tried to create other markets by having other products, like the cargo bikes that we had online. We had electric bikes and these kind of things, and none of it was sort of going there.
Right.
So when we were accepted into the Mass Challenge Accelerator, we were one.
Which you just dropped. How did that happen?
Yeah, let's talk about that.
For Mass Challenge is a big deal. We've actually had clients who've come to us before to help get them into Mass Challenge, because they want to present these ideas. It's basically a think tank of really capable people that can essentially launch these ideas into the stratosphere. And it's a wonderful vertical for people to get involved in, but it's not simple, and it's a pretty exclusive club. Mass Challenge.
There are three rounds of interviews you got to do for Mass Challenge. And so essentially over 6,000 people around the world
Wow.
apply to come to this
Wow.
challenge. And of that,
people.
of that, they cream off the first 2,500 to go to that first round of interview. Then from there, it gets to another 500. Okay. And then out of that 500, from there, it goes to the final 128.
Wow.
And we were fortunate enough and blessed enough to be one of that 128, to be in that accelerator.
Amazing.
Yeah, and so we were there. It was difficult for us because we're not a fintech, a financial technical company, a biotechnical company. We're not an engineering society. We're not a food. Right. We were a manufacturer, you know. Right. So they had no partners for us.
Yeah.
Because usually there's someone you could work with. Here's a Pepsi, it'll give you. Sure. Here's someone. So they partnered us with Draper Technologies. They do stuff in space. Yeah. Draper Technologies, they are responsible for sending science experiments to space and doing those things and getting that kind of research feedback. What do they do with a company like us? None of us knew. So
I don't think they knew.
Yeah.
No,
they
didn't. So I gave them a simple idea. I said, well, can we use bikes in space? They're like, probably not.
I mean, you got to throw it out there, right?
Yeah. I got to throw it out there. I mean, it's a multi-billion dollar company.
Listen, this Brandale's a free thinker. We like him.
Way up.
Yeah. You think the Tour de France is hard. Wait till you do the Tour de
Moon. Hey, listen, Elon Musk launched a Tesla into space. Yeah, I don't see anything wrong with what he's saying.
Then as we were talking, an idea came out. Well, you know, I was just going to put police on the side of one of these bikes and see if they wanted one. They were like, better than do that, let's go ask the police departments what they want in a bicycle.
Right.
And find out what it is that keeps them away from riding bicycles and why they don't want bicycles or why they only use so few bicycles. Yeah. or why they only get deployed doing marathons and protests and stuff like this.
Right.
Let's find all that stuff out. And the weirdest pivot came during this informational workshops. It's not that they don't want to ride bicycles or they're out of shape. Can you guess why they don't?
The lack of technology.
Closer.
No idea.
Not comfortable?
Communication.
Oh, really?
Okay.
It's communication. Yeah. Because every single thing that they do while a cop is on a bicycle has to be done via walkie-talkie. That means when they are reading a license plates, when they are trying to coordinate with EMS, when they're talking about your ID, where they are, how to coordinate, it's all over walkie-talkie, so it's voice. But in most departments, they only have a certain number of voice channels for communication. So if we're tying up this voice channel because this guy's running the license plate of a junker that's parked illegally on the street, there could be a bank robbery 2 blocks away.
Right. Oh.
So you're tying up voice communication.
Gotcha.
So if you can free up communication, you can literally put more bikes on the road without the worry that you'll have this. So we did that and we created the modules and things like that, and then we put that out there on the test form. So that helped us learn a little bit there. But then we found another aspect. Certain places only have a few translators to only do a few languages. So therefore, when we're in places like Framingham, which has a heavy Portuguese speaking population, or during the marathon in that mile six stretch, we found out that over 8 languages get spoken, but there's only 2 translators
for the whole,
you know, both sides of the street going back and forth to figure out what's going on with all these people. And they're speaking languages that they have to radio all the way down to Boston to find a translator. Because a lot of other communications equipment, such as Google and things like that, are not encrypted. So they can't necessarily do this stuff over that. So we have to have better communication technology with foreign speaking residents and citizens. So what we came up with was that not only do we need a bike with the visual dispatch console and things like that, we also created a helmet that can do language translation.
Oh my God.
This is what the Globe article is about. So basically, you can literally have a Portuguese-speaking resident in front of you.
Yeah.
You speak no Portuguese.
Yeah.
They speak to you into a mic, into the helmet. It translates on your console.
Oh, wow.
Reads it back in English.
That's
incredible.
Reads it back in English. Then you can push a button and it'll speak back to Portuguese.
No kidding. That's
incredible. And this is what we couldn't show because of technology and and other kinds of patents and stuff like
radio
that.
Radio theater of the mind, so that's okay.
Yeah. So basically we have that. But then we also found out that there's a third aspect to it that we needed to add too. A lot of policemen are not necessarily cycling people.
Right.
They didn't have the clothing to wear. Those who are experienced wear compression
clothing. Oh my God, so you create, it's a layer of another problem
it's
and
a
another,
layer
solution,
another problem.
And another
solution.
Problem. Wow.
And the beautiful thing about it is that we're not alone in this. Where it's not just 1854, it's 1854 Draper, 99 degrees. We have other companies that are in a play, but I don't want to say any of their big names, but sure. They're also based in Framingham and they do audio.
Okay, so.
Rides the road. And so we're working with
never
them.
Never going to figure that one out.
But basically, we're working with them. But basically, the clothing, we found out that another issue with bigger departments such as the Northeastern Police Department, such as the Boston Police Department, when their officers are healthy, they get bonuses.
Okay.
The number of miles you walk, mm-hmm. the number of things you do.
So the bike riding becomes another level of it.
However, you can't track it. There was no way of tracking your fitness on the bike. So therefore, we decided to take some existing technology and embed it into compression clothing.
Okay.
So we can monitor heart rate, distance travel, things like that,
so
blood
cool.
pressure, fatigue, and everything else into the clothing. So this package we ended up taking to the Chicago International Association of Police Chiefs in Chicago. And this is a worldwide event in which all the police chiefs from not only just the local major cities, but all over the world. And some foreign countries don't have militaries. They have state national police departments. Mm-hmm. That's what they call them.
Right.
They were there as well.
Oh, wow.
And so we ended up trying to measure the demand for such a package. Mm-hmm. Like, how is this looking? How many of this? And so we're going there thinking, okay, maybe a couple of hundred people do this or that. No. We basically, this is what the Globe article didn't talk about. We basically did about 16,000 units.
Wow.
And so at about 10 grand a pop. And we qualified that lead. We narrowed it down because we're talking negotiations and things. That's been narrowed down to about 12,000 units that we're trying to deliver in 2020, which is probably not going to happen.
But but that's a good problem to have.
But it's a good problem to have, because what it is that we're going to take the first deployment that we give to the Boston Police Department and use it, you know, as a testing feedback. Now, there's another layer to this I have to talk about. I'm sorry.
Sure.
No. This is why you're here.
Because I don't really get to talk about this a whole lot.
To catch everybody up on this, there was this guy named Brandale who wanted to make a bike and with different colored wheels and whatever. And now here we are with probably the highest tech piece of moving two-wheel
transportation
out there. And we still have problems. So now what's the next layer?
So the next layer is that we were talking to police departments, particularly Chief William Gross, Commissioner William Gross of the Boston PD. Mm-hmm. And he brought other people to the table. So we got to sit with the New York Police Commissioner, the Chicago Police Commissioner, then the person from Houston who does what's called HCC 05, which is Harris County, that entire region.
It's a massive area.
Seattle. Now, all these regions have bicycles, but they want the bicycles to create a different system of community policing. So it's not just we're bringing the bikes in for arresting people and handing out tickets and things like that. It's to administer help and services to people who need them.
Okay.
So what it is that our first bicycles that we're going to deploy in Boston will be deployed in what they call the New Market region. Mm-hmm. And just recently, there was an incident where an officer was assaulted by people who were homeless, who were living on the streets alongside. And they basically have this bad picture of the Boston PD putting a wheelchair in the back of a car.
Right.
And this was one of the images that went worldwide.
Yeah.
And so what we're designing is a community policing program around the bike.
Okay.
So imagine a bicycle cop coming up to a homeless person and being able to administer help. Here's where you can go get a meal. Here's where you can go to this. Oh, let me call your social worker to tell them where you are, mm-hmm. because you may be missing from the social registry and this and that, or you have a homeless, you know, children who are there. And so what we're trying to do is usher in a next generation of what it means to be a community police officer, so that we can not arrest people for minor things, such as mental health issues, because part of the technology that we're bringing in is to also video what's going on so mental health people can learn more about how to interact with people who are having mental health issues based on being off of their medication or being outside of their social network of mental health officials, so that when the EMS is on the way, they see how the person is responding and they can talk directly to the officer as to how you deal with this person here.
Right.
Because what happens now is that the EMS has to fight traffic, wait till they get to the scene, and then figure out how to diagnose things. And then based on the reports that they have, because so many things go on, this person who is in need of help may not get the help and treatment that they need on the spot.
Gotcha.
So what we're talking about now is what happens in the next generation of policing communities. And this is going to be a conduit.
And that really ties into your original mission as well, which I don't think we talked too much about yet. Yes. But I mean, but can you tell us why 1854?
The name 1854 comes from a very important event that happened in Framingham. I'm kind of a closet history buff as well. So one of the most historical events in Framingham was an anti-slavery rally in July 4th, 1854. And this was in protest of the Fugitive Slave Act.
Okay.
Because prior to Franklin Pierce's presidency, African Americans who escaped enslavement and made it to free states such as Massachusetts, Philadelphia, and these places, they were free. You were gone. You were over the border. You were great. But when Franklin Pierce came into office, he ushered in the Fugitive Slave Act, which meant that any person from the South can come up and accuse any black person who was still not a citizen, so you had no right to fight your citizenship in court, of being a runaway or children of a runaway. So therefore, they can literally cuff you and take you back down South. This happened to in May of 1854 to a gentleman named Anthony Burns. And Boston was still upset about this because they had outlawed slavery in 1826. So this had been almost 30 years of freedom. So
Framingham, it was a stop on
the Underground Railroad.
And there are still places, churches and whatnot that had
30 years is a generation.
Yeah. Right.
You have a generation that was born free.
Right. Why would you try to arrest me?
Why now?
Yeah. Well, why exactly. now? And, yeah. and so to protest the hypocrisy of celebrating the Independence Day while people of my complexion were living in pure terror, you had a group of abolitionists. You had Sojourner Truth. You had Henry David Thoreau, which the police vice is named after. You had a guy named Wendell Pierce. And most importantly, you had a newspaper publisher. His name was William Lloyd Garrison. And during this event, Garrison burned the U.S. Constitution.
An original copy.
Yes, an original copy.
An original copy. Set it on fire.
And he set it on fire. And this was like Colin Kaepernick kneeling of 1854.
Yes. Right.
It set off the abolitionist movement. Those who were for and against, that line was now drawn, clearly.
It was essentially the shot that heard around the world for the abolitionist movement.
And it happened right there in Framingham in a place called Harmony Grove. And to commemorate, and the way I see it is that it's very similar to people who have served their time behind bars, particularly women. But because of other issues going on once they're received, they can't find housing, they can't find adequate employment, and they can't find decent schools for their children, they're taking back to jail. So were they ever really free?
Right.
Is the question. They've lived outside of the world for a while, but now that they've done this, but because society wasn't put in place, were they ever really free? So they're brought back, and I think we need a new abolitionist movement to say that if you're coming back into society after serving time, you need to have the people outside to create the balance to keep you free.
Right.
So the whole point of my company is to pay living wage, because if we can pay and create living wage employment for people who are formerly incarcerated, then now we're breaking the cycle of generations that will go back to prison. Because in my other side of being a historian, I love data. And so in my research of data, I found out that children of people who are formerly incarcerated are four times more likely to become incarcerated themselves. Right. So therefore, if I can change the outlook for the parents, I change it for the children as well. And knowing that 80% of children who have a parent living with them who have criminal background, that parent is a woman, it's better for us to create jobs for the women who are coming out, because they are usually living in the households with the children.
Right.
So therefore, by creating a company that takes care of that issue is, for me, what my life mission is. So when all the other stuff hit, I didn't have the margin to sustain these jobs. And my biggest fear is starting and not being able to stop.
Right. You want it to be a sustainable business that will continue on.
Exactly.
I see another really important layer here, in that you're approaching the problem not only through the sustainability issue, but with the hybrid community policing concept, where you're getting more information, you're able to deal with these things, which will result in less arrests that don't need to happen, or less altercations that could be harmful to the officer and or the person.
Yes.
You don't immediately take something that's out and put it right back in, and that's the cycle.
Yeah,
and
you reduce recidivism.
You definitely reduce recidivism, because it turns out that because of the way society is, women become more incarcerated for nonviolent crimes.
Yes.
And it's really sad, because where we give men time and restitution, we kind of understand male anger and this and that, women are over penalized for things like domestic violence, for things like
because they see it as so against the model of what a woman should be. So exactly. Therefore, they should be penalized 50% or 100% more.
Yes. So like the mothers who can't find a babysitter,
yes.
And they got to go look for work, but while they're gone, someone reports the kids being home alone.
Exactly.
And,
right.
Exactly. And that kind of.
I think something else that's really important to mention, and what I love about what you're doing with the company, there was a time not that long ago in this country where the place you worked for was a part of the community itself at large, meaning that you paid a living wage because you wanted people to be able to buy homes, yes. And support, shop locally, go to restaurants, and have a quality of life that was better, yes. Than the generation prior to them. You can go back and start in the 80s when it became greed is good. It became all about shareholder value was the preeminent factor for any,
yes.
Business. And screw the workers. Let's pay them as little as we can. Let's cut their benefits as low as we can. And good luck to you. And also, we're going to cut social benefits as well. So have fun. And what you're doing with this company is really remarkable to take it back a step where it's we're part of the community. We're based in Framingham. We want to support people that and give them a chance to build their own generational support,
yes.
and sustain itself and be not just a transactional business, but to be a part of the community that's going to grow for generations to,
yes.
Come.
I think it's really,
exactly.
Remarkable.
And you can be financially successful doing this. I think
the
idea
that
what we do
setting,
is,
yeah.
And that's
you can
the
make
thing.
A good living doing, yeah. It.
And it's like the numbers that we're projected right now.
Yeah.
I'm underselling what I can pay my workers because not only will we have a state-of-the-art factory that will require less people, I don't need 1,000 people to build 1,000 bikes anymore. I can do it once 165, but those 165 people can be paid very well.
Right, and they can go on to,
and
the,
they can go
to start
on.
Their own other things.
And
down
they
the
learn
road.
A trade. I,
yes.
mean, and that's, I mean, they if, hopefully they stay with you forever, but
no.
but should they not, they have something that they can go.
Oh, and not only that, we're proving to the world that there is a viable blue collar labor market.
Yes.
Because for a while, people like American workers don't exist, and American workers don't want to work. Oh, well, you have these advanced machinery and,
yeah.
Robotics, well, we can't find people to do it.
Yeah.
Well, it's because
they don't work for $6 an hour, that's why.
Yeah.
No, it's not that. It's just that you're going to Harvard,
yeah.
Trying to ask some kid at Harvard to come work in a factory and make, you're trying to offer him $60,000. And for him, he thinks he's going to go make $130,000.
Yeah.
So he's not going
right.
to go work here. But yet you have a group of workers here that are killing themselves trying to go between this big box retailer and that big box retailer. In that $7 an hour job.
And that big box retailer that only lets them work 32 hours a week.
Yes, because they can't be full-time.
Because they don't want to pay the benefits.
They don't want to pay the benefits.
Right. Right, exactly.
And they won't offer them a schedule a week in advance so that they can
that's
manage
right.
their time to delegate
child
a
care.
Second part-time job or childcare and
exactly.
things like that. But it's the only person offering them jobs at all. So you mean to tell me this person can't be trained?
Yeah.
This person doesn't want to work. This person, there's no opportunities. But then you see the other side. And there are universities and colleges that want to give them degrees for working with machinery, that wants to take them back to school, their offers.
Yep.
And that's what we're bringing to the table now. We're bringing not only a workforce development thing, which is going to be large, but we're developing skills to where people don't understand that this is a skilled labor pool that we've never tapped in.
Yes.
So for me to say, I'm creating programmers, people to work with high-level biochemical components,
yeah.
and materials. We're working with all kinds of machinery and robotics. This is a labor pool that people are going to poach from, and I'm okay with that because,
yeah.
if someone leaves me, that means you're going to make 80,000.
Right.
You know,
right?
But it's also, and what I think is so critical here is that you're creating an intangible value, which,
yes.
is. This belief that I can do this, that I went from, I was here in life and I was incarcerated and I couldn't get a job when it came out, and now I've learned to value myself, that I can learn skills, I can be successful, I've seen a model that now works, and I can take that and extrapolate it further to do something else with my life.
And not only that person, the kids are watching.
Right.
The kids are watching that mom,
yeah.
who everybody counted out, now saying, guess what? We have a Christmas this year.
Right. Yeah.
You know, we can buy a house. We can do the things that we've always dreamed about.
That's right.
And not only that, you can actually go to college and you don't have to do this. We
right.
don't have to do that. But I think that what we're doing now is we're creating a model,
mm-hmm.
for what the 21st century company has to look like.
Yes.
Because those companies that were creating the billionaires and the $7 an hour workers, I think they are still going to exist. But it's going to be so passe because what we're finding out now is that this generation that we're in, when they look at businesses, they look at the business from the core,
mm-hmm.
all the way out.
Right.
They want to know who you're supporting, what you're doing, what your ethical moral code is, because all that's baked into the decision of whether or not we buy and support your product.
Yeah, we just did an episode with Joshua Croak from Action by Design, who talked a lot about core values of a company and when you choose to work somewhere. do those values align with your values?
Exactly.
And there's so much knowledge in the world now, it's easy to do a quick Google search and say, yes, they match or they don't.
Exactly. And it's sort of, for us, that's part of our brand. Mm-hmm. And that's something I learned.
Yeah. Well, that became your brand.
Yeah. I mean, that became our brand.
It's unforeseen. So they use freedom and power as the thing. The idea that the bicycle could be part of the freedom and power. I can now move not only horizontally through the world, but vertically through society in this situation. Yes. So the bicycle becomes a motif for success in society. And it's ironic because when the bicycle first showed up in the United States and around the world, it was a huge sensation because suddenly you didn't need to have four horses in a carriage
or
an automobile that was super expensive. You could get around and blast around at 25 miles an hour across Paris on a two-wheel bicycle that you could get for not too much money. And that became a craze. And so to go back to such an old technology with such new ideas and have it still make that same kind of impact is amazing.
So yes. Speaking of the old technology, we always like to talk about Worcester, and there is a Worcester connection
here.
That's right.
It has to do with this black band, and I'm hoping that you can tell
us. Yeah, let's tie this, we'll wrap it up, but let's tie it back to Worcester.
Let's tie it back to Worcester in two ways. First of all, the Worcester PD is gonna be on these bikes as well. They're awesome. Worcester County Sheriff's Department, they're gonna do a maintenance thing, and it's gonna be a pre-release training out there. But more importantly, when we were first designing stuff, we thought about Major Taylor. Mm-hmm. He was one of the preeminent world-class bicycle champions of the world. And so he wore these beautiful sweaters.
Yeah.
And there was a line of these beautiful sweaters that he wore. And one in particular had a stripe on the shoulder like this with a white sleeve. And so we wanted to do a line that was kind of an homage to him as well, which took old cycling brands that existed during his era and incorporated it with this signature design on the sleeve. We kind of missed our market for this winter, but we'll be back. But the idea of Major Taylor being this groundbreaking individual from Worcester who came to Worcester to launch is so important. But think about all the Major Taylors we can create if we have a bicycle. When we have this bicycle manufacturing facility, because one of the ideas that's been brought to us is that there's a lot of people who are training children in the inner cities to ride on velodromes. These are the Olympic velodromes, and we have one gentleman that's actually made it from inner city Harlem, New York, who's on the Olympic team, USA cycling team.
Wow!
And so, but his bike's made by Trek. Boo.
Well, next time.
So basically, by 2024, we want to run that. but the idea of us one day being able to get back into the consumer market and create this generation of Major Taylors out there is kind of like we saw what Venus Williams did. We saw what Serena Williams did. We saw what Tiger Woods has done. We're seeing now what Bubba Wallace and NASCAR is doing.
Yeah.
What happens if we can do that in other areas and other aspects?
Right.
Because I think that companies have a responsibility to create the next, what's next,
but
also to leave a legacy, to create a pathway for other people to have imaginations and to go forward with their dreams as well.
Absolutely.
It's inspirational. So a philosophy that became a technology that became a business, which is just amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you, Brandale, for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Aaron. Thank you, David. Thank you, WICN, for letting us have Business Beat and sharing these amazing stories. And we did connect it to Worcester. I'm really excited about that. Thank you for watching, and we'll catch up with you next time.
Well, that was an interesting journey. What started as a dead end turned into a really amazing story.
I love the concept of his business, and I love where he's going, and the bikes are beautiful.
Thanks for listening to Business Beat, and thank you to WICN and David Ginsberg for allowing us to do this show. We'll catch up with you guys again next week.